capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to Level Talk Programme. My name's John Harrison. The Saudi-led coalition has stepped up airstrikes on Iran-backed rebels in Yemen as a fragile ceasefire breaks down. Headlines like this have been covering the international news for some time now. But why is Saudi Arabia backing the Yemeni government? Who are the rebels in this, one of the world's poorest countries? And what is Iran doing backing the anti-Yemeni government Houthi rebels? Other questions that come up is, why is the US and UK involved in this whole situation? Why are they sending arms to Saudi Arabia? And what is Russia's position? Here on this program to discuss this issue is Greg Roman, the director of the Middle East Forum, a foreign policy institute in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Hussein al-Buhayiti, a Yemeni journalist on the ground in Yemen. Now, if I can ask you please to tell us, first of all, what is happening now in Yemen? Hussein, I gather you're there in the capital city. Can you just give us in a couple of minutes, please, a brief resume?
At this point, there are heavy clashes in Nahm East Sana'a and as well inside the Saudi border. Yemeni army and Houthi fighter has conducted in the last 48 hours several attacks on Saudi army position south of Najran and Asir, south KSA. And just in the last 5 hours, there is a huge attack on Nahm East Sana'a. And there are reported airstrikes across the front line. But of course, in Sana'a and some major city, I mean, there is no airstrike because I think the Saudi, they're trying to avoid, especially Sana'a, just to show the world that they are like, they're keeping the so-called ceasefire. And Wildi Sheikh, he had just left yesterday. He has delivered like a draft for a solution in Yemen. But Yemeni parties in Sana'a, and they will... answer in the coming few days.
Okay, thank you. Now, a lot of us listeners don't actually understand what this whole thing in Yemen is all about. Our heads are so full of the situation in Syria and what's going on in other parts of the world, including, of course, the US elections, and we just don't understand what this all is all about. Greg, could you please, again, in just a couple of minutes, just give us a basic sort of orientation, please, into why this war and this fighting is happening? Greg.
Sure. So there's four actors that we have to consider, two within Yemen and two outside of the country that are the backdrop to this conflict that began in March 2015 when Saudi Arabia and eight other Arab semi-Arab allies intervened in a conflict that began shortly after the transition of power between former Yemeni President Ali Abdul Saleh and current Yemeni President Hadi. The individuals that are working with another in the north of the country, the Houthi rebels, being led by Malik al-Houthi and also by former President Saleh, fought six wars against one another from the early 1950s until only 3 years ago when they were able to settle a peace agreement.
Yeah.
Now, part of this peace agreement was the idea that Saleh would transfer from power and his vice president Hadi would take over. But what actually happened was the Iranian-influenced Houthis saw an opportunity to once again rise up against the main government in Sana'a, kick the government out of the capital, and sent them into exile until Saudi intervention in March of 2015. So what we have now, looking at the two other actors outside of the country, Saudi Arabia backing the main Sunni group, which is the government, and Iran, the main Shia group, which is the Houthi Zaidi rebels, they're an offshoot of Shia Islam, are fighting a war which is taking place in four other Arab capitals, where we have Sunni and Shia fighting each other in Iraq. We have them fighting each other in Lebanon and also in Syria. Yemen has been called the forgotten war due to the low-intensity conflict taking place along their border with Saudi Arabia
and
the more sensationalized conflict that's taking place in Iraq and Syria and in Lebanon. But over 10,000 people have been killed, including over 4,000 civilians.
Okay, you mentioned Shia and Sunni. There's sort of two major subgroups within the Islamic world. There are many more. Hussein, again, tell us, you know, people who don't understand, can you tell us more? Why are the Houthi rebels fighting President Hadi's government? What are the main reasons? What are they fighting against?
Yes, I want to mention first about the Sunni and the Shi'i religious stuff. In Yemen, we haven't reached this point like in Syria or in Iraq. What's happening now is mainly like politically motivated, just, you know, is about the control of Yemen. And of course, if you see what, when the main problem started after the national dialogue, the dialogue that came after the Gulf Initiative, which have set kind of this conference, and they have outcomes after the dialogue. The thing that Hadi has not implemented those outcomes by forming a new government, it was the first thing. He hasn't done that for 6 months. So after increased the fuel of the price of the fuel, and this has caused a revolution that was led Ansarullah, or as they call them, the Houthi. And this has ended by the resignation of Hadi and as well by the downfall of that government. So after that, when the war really started, it just is when the Saudi has intervened in Yemen directly, supported and British and other country. Because in Yemen we had many, many conflicts before. But you know, the main problem is the foreign intervention.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as the speaker from America said about the Iran backing, this is not an excuse, you know, to attack a country.
So basically these problems are local and they're to do with territorial disputes, economic problems, the handover of power from one president to another. The Sunni-Shia split is not the main reason. Is that correct, Greg?
I would assume that assessment. I think that's what's fueling the conflict right now.
What?
Is the shipments of arms from the Iranians to Houthi rebels. They're
okay.
Not just using them against their own people within Yemen, but they're also using them to target international shipping lanes in the Gulf of Yemen and also the Gulf of Aden, as we saw in a recent attack against an Emirati tanker and three American ships. But we also see the Houthi government not recognizing international law. Not only did they lead a coup d'etat against the legitimate president, President Hadi, but they're also in violation of UN Resolution 6, which is the UN internationally backed peace process, the dialogue that he was talking about. The Iranians only seek a way in which to cause more trouble for Western interests and also for the Arabs writ large by supporting the Houthi rebellion against the legitimate Hadi government. And this is why Saleh, the foreign president, is involved. He sees an opportunity to take power.
So then, could you then say that this situation in Yemen is really a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia, both of those countries having their own international backers? Is that right? I'd like to say Greg and then Hussein.
I would call this the fourth proxy war between the Saudis and their Gulf Arab allies.
Yeah.
Also including Egypt and Morocco. You have ISIS, which is gaining ground in southern Yemen. You have Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which has always been active. Remember Anwar al-Malaki and the Yemeni Al-Qaeda cells that were emanating in 2000 with the attack on USS Cole. There's a need for a strong central government, not a Houthi-backed rebellion, which is causing dangers in their country, which will eventually cause dangers for America's and Europe's Arab allies, but also for other actors within the region. So the Houthis have to be stopped, and they have to comply with international law.
Hussein, would you agree with Greg's overall panoramic vision here?
Actually not, because whatever he said about the Iran involvement in Yemen is not an excuse to start a war and to kill 10,000 civilians and to have a blockade that have killed 10,000 children for lack of food and medicine. This is according to the UNICEF. And every country has the right to have a relationship with any other country. But on the top of that, this excuse about the Iran involvement was one of the excuses to start the war in Yemen. They said that Iran sent in weapons into the Houthis. And now, after 18 months, they try to cover their failure by saying that Iran sent in the Houthis weapons. So what have they done with 18 months of blockade? Couldn't they not stop these shipments? They show you either that Iran has no involvement in Yemen, or either the excuse is just a big lie. And about the threat to the international shipping lane, Yemen has never threatened, for thousands of years, has never threatened the shipping lane, because the main source of food into Yemen is coming through Bab al-Mandab, water strait. And as well, we have seen the announcement of the attack of the U.S. destroyer. At the end, what did the Pentagon say in the third attack, as they call it? They said there was a failure in the counter radar system, or I don't know what you call it. So it could be as well the first one. It could be the second one. I want to make it clear. Do you think that, the Houthi or as well the Yemeni army who are fighting now side by side against the Saudi, are they that stupid to target a ship in an international shipping lane? So, they have enough enemy.
You know, there is this accusation against the previous government for starting this situation. We've just been told that they instigated a series of actions which resulted in the death of, Hussein says, tens of thousands of people. Now, whose fault was it to begin with? Both sides? Or what was the reason that this whole thing started? You said in the beginning of the program, but whose fault is it?
I think that the Houthi rebellion against the legitimate government of President Saleh is what was the catalyst for this conflict.
But the people don't rebel unless there's a reason for rebelling.
I'll get into that point in the analysis if you give me a few seconds.
Yeah.
When President Saleh agreed to give up power and President Hadi took over, there wasn't enough international support for that transitional government. I think that Western forces were more focused on the Yemeni counterterrorism mission than they were on building democratic institutions within the country.
Mm-hmm.
So when the national dialogue took place between the transfer of power, the Houthis, 6 months into it, under Malik al-Houthi, were not willing to spend more time finding out what was going on with the UN resolution and what was trying to happen with this UN-backed peace process between the Houthis and the rest of the Sunni Yemenis. And in doing so, they decided it would be a better idea to imprison the cabinet and the president within their own palace. And then if you remember, there was a bomb attack that took place in Sana'a, which was an outside attack that we believe was done by al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
And in their doing so, the Houthis used that attack as an excuse to take power from the cabinet, to expel Hadi's government from Sana'a, and then to begin this internecine conflict, which required the intervention of Sunni Gulf Arab states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would argue that we know that there was the presence of the Al-Quds Brigade from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps within Yemen from at least 2008. And they were arming and training Houthi rebels from 2009, well before this current conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Iranians saw an opportunity to once again spit in the eye of Sunni Arab states by encouraging the Houthis to launch this revolt.
Okay, so we're not going to decide this, resolve it, but it's important for listeners to hear both points of view. Thank you very much. Let's move on. But before we do, let's take a short break.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Program. Today I'm joined by Greg Roman, director of the Middle East Forum, a foreign policy institute in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Hussein Al-Buhayiti, a journalist working in Yemen. Now, we're discussing the issues, the current situation in Yemen, and trying to understand what on earth is going on. In the first half of the program, we've heard basically two different takes on the reason the trouble started. Now, let's move on, and I'd like to suggest to you gentlemen that we have a sort of stalemate situation, don't we? Nobody seems to be winning. You know, a lot of people have been killed and an awful lot of bombings being carried out. But after more than a year and a half of fighting, no side appears to be close to a decisive military victory. Would you agree with me, Hussein, on that?
Yeah, of course. But actually, the failure, you can count the failure on the one who started the war, because they are the one who declared that they will, enter Sana'a and they will reinstate Hadi, and they couldn't do it till now. And as well, when they started the war, they said they want to protect their border from any threat coming from the Houthis. There was no threat coming from Yemen to Saudi Arabia. And now the Houthis are really threatening Saudi Arabia. They have tens of kilometers inside Saudi. They have seized several towns, and they are closing up on Najran City. So this war has actually created a threat into Saudi border. And I think from this point, the Saudi are the one who did not achieve their goals. But for the Houthi and the Yemeni army, they didn't have at the beginning any goals to achieve. Their main goal is to defend themselves and to make other goals of the other parties fail. And this is what they have succeeded in till now.
Thank you. We hear your point of view. Greg, what would be your answer to that question that I asked Hussein?
So I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk that's coming out of Iranian propaganda machines and also the allies of the Houthis talking about the siege that's going on against Sana'a right now. But let us not forget the Houthi siege of the Yemeni city of Taiz. There's over 200,000 individuals which are currently being subjugated, not just to an entire blockade around this Hadi-affiliated city, but also shutting down 37 out of 40 hospitals, food not being able to get in, daily mortar, missile, and other weapons attacks against these people. There's, you know, both sides suffering from this war. But the real way out of this conflict is for the Houthis to comply, as I said beforehand, with the international dialogue that's backed by the United Nations, both Russia and the United States. You know, the three permanent members of the Security Council have gotten behind this. And the people who are enabling the conflict to go on, whether it be Oman and the smugglers that they're allowing Iranian weapon shipments to come through the Persian Gulf into Oman and then over the Yemeni border to supply the Houthis, or if it's the Saudis and their Arab allies ensuring that the way in which they comply with the ceasefire is of a defensive nature and not of a offensive nature, so we don't see attacks like what happened with the hit on the funeral. A funeral procession that killed 140 innocents. They really have to have maintain and hold their fire and hold their powder on both sides.
Okay, now another question that I think a lot of listeners would perhaps like to ask you too. If foreign powers were not involved, would this situation have already been resolved? You know, if Iran wasn't backing one side and Saudi Arabia the other, and all the other countries that are involved in backing those two external countries that I've just mentioned. Again, Hussein, your view of this, please.
I mean, I don't know, like, about when this, Iran has, Iran is supporting the Houthi, like, politically. They have recognized this latest high ruling council, and as well in media, they do support the Houthi 100%. But about the direct involvement and weapons involvement, Yemen was known to be a hub for, I would call it, arms dealers in Yemen. I mean, many contracts used to be signed in Yemen. Many weapons used to be sent to Eritrea, to Ethiopia, to Djibouti, you know. So Yemen is known. We have lots of weapons. There is no need.
Okay, but if they weren't there, would this situation have been resolved?
I mean, of course. I mean, but I think there is no backing, like I said, from Iran. The backing is from the Saudi Arabia. And they've been talking about seizing weapons and weapons shipment from Iran. We haven't seen a single evidence. They have said, the Saudi Arabian has said they have caught money. Iranian Republican Guard, we call them Revolutionary Guard, and military advisors. They haven't shown any picture of anyone. So this is just an excuse for intervention, an excuse to bring the United States into the conflict in Yemen. And if, let's say, if this is right what they say, does this have the right, as your guest from America keeps saying, does this give them the right to have a blockade on a country? I mean, when he said about Iranian propaganda, what he thinks that he's been saying from the beginning, he sounds like a Siri, the spokesperson of the Saudi-led coalition. There is no blockade in Taiz only. There is a blockade in Yemen.
Okay.
Just last 48 hours, three children have died of severe malnutrition. And there is no blockade on them from Houthi. There is only blockade from the Saudi-led coalition. So this blockade affecting all Yemeni and affecting as all people from Taiz.
Okay, thank you, Hussein. Now, Greg, accusation here. I'd like to hear your opinion that Iran is not backing the Houthi rebellion and this is all being made up. So that's the first question I'd like you to answer. And my second question remains the same as before. If the external powers were to move out, would the government, would the Haiti government have actually won by now or not?
I understand that being in Sana'a and this intractable conflict right now, it's very hard to see beyond the rose-colored glasses of the war which is going on within Hussein's country. But when we look at the sources that are being reported, not just Western media outlets, like a Reuters article that came out 6 days ago with an Iranian official confirming that he's supplying funds. They're supplying surface-to-surface short-range missiles, small arms, diplomatic support, and beyond that, training for Houthis. This isn't the Houthis confirming this. This is the Iranian government confirming this.
Mm-hmm.
So they are openly advocating for the supply of Houthi rebels against Hadi's government. Now, the question that you would ask about the support of international actors and their involvement, if it was removed, I think that if we were to consider this being a land-based issue itself, where you had Hadi Ansala, the Houthis coming together with some of the other Yemeni groups and the Sunni factions, some of the tribes right now, they're active in Aden, the de facto capital, Salma Sana is occupied by the Houthis, there might be an opportunity for a national dialogue. But if we go back 60, 70 years to the idea of North Yemen and South Yemen, you remember when there were two countries, one which was Houthi-backed, the other which was unified, the idea of a united Yemen was one that came from international powers. So maybe it's better off if there are two countries in that region. But we're not one to decide that because it's going to be up to the Yemeni people.
I think, in a way, Greg, you're deflecting my question, and I suppose it's a question that can't really be taken seriously because all of these countries
It could be taken seriously. The only issue is that there's too much international interest at stake to think that this can be solved just between
in any other way.
The two sides.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Hussein, we take your point. I don't want to spend an awful long time on that particular point. There's so many other things to discuss. We only have 4 minutes left of this program. I'd like to ask you both very quickly about the US and the UK involvement in Syria, because an awful lot of people all over the world are saying, like, okay, Iran and Saudi Arabia, at least they're kind of next door, but what on earth is the US doing there, and what is the UK doing setting arms to Saudi Arabia, which are then being used in Yemen? Okay, let's change the order now. Let's start with Greg. Why is the U.S. now kind of being the big policeman guy in Yemen?
I think there's three reasons. The first is what we saw last week with the attack against U.S. destroyers and the PONS, which was an amphibious landing dock, and making sure the international shipping lanes are being protected against any interests which are being threatened by Houthi-based C2C surface missile attacks. The second reason is, I think, because it's a U.S. national security interest to hedge against Iranian influence, against the Americans' Gulf Arab allies. So if there's a campaign being led by the Saudis, the U.S. are going to back it. And the third reason, which I think is the most important reason, is because it's against U.S. interests in the region to see instability within Yemen itself. This is where the attack.
A question of what is instability in the interpretation of the United States of America, and is that interpretation, you know, in line with what's happening in the Middle East? But let's not answer that question. I'd just like to ask you, Hussein, what do you think about U.S. involvement in Yemen?
The United States, Britain, actually, especially the United States, is the backbone of this war in Yemen. We remember that this war was declared from Washington by the U.S. ambassador there. In the first few minutes from the war, there was a White House statement supporting the war, and they said they will be supporting it with the satellite image and all these things. But to be honest, the kind of support that the Saudi get, if the United States will stop the support, the war will stop straight away. Because there is a fueling jet that provides Saudi jet so they can conduct airstrike across Yemen.
You mean it will be over because the government will lose and the Houthi rebels will win? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I guess it's simple as that. I mean, all the weapons used and guided bombs and all the targets and the blockade as well, they are held by the United States Navy. So it's kind of a direct involvement by the United States. And I just want to answer about when he said about the stop of ballistic missile from Yemen into Saudi. This happened and this started after the Saudi war. We have to remember that. There was no attack on any ship in the Red Sea. And the only ship that they strike is the United Arab Navy ship. And this was a Navy ship which was involved in the war. So they have the right to sink it. And there was no attack on Saudi border. And I mean, in Yemen, we had many, many civil wars.
I remember that there was a whole story of history of pirate attacks, you know, coming from Yemen. You know, it was serious. And people were talking about sending warships down there. It's going a few years back. But, okay, Greg, can I...
This was before the Houthis.
Are you sure? Okay.
Which attack? There was a pirate attack. I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Okay, Greg, now, you're not British, and so, you know, I'm not going to accuse you of that. But what on earth is the UK doing selling arms to Saudi Arabia, which are then used to, you know, bomb people? I mean, what are we doing?
I think that the UK-Saudi relationship is based not just on military and logistical coordination. There's a lot of Saudi money that's sitting right now in UK banks.
Yeah.
There's a pecuniary relationship between the two countries. There's a lot of expats Saudi Arabia that are involved in the UK, a lot of business interests that are in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's a reason why the UK should be supplying arms to Saudi Arabia, but I think what the Saudis are doing is a legitimate war I think that the Brits have the right to support their allies in this legitimate struggle against the Houthi rebellion and Iranian interests in the region, and that they have every reason to supply their allies in a fight that, at the end of the day, might affect British interests in the region, too. So in terms of the real politic of this, I think that England should be selling arms to Saudi Arabia,
okay,
and at the same time encouraging international detente between the Houthis and the Hadi Bank.
I suppose it's sort of the old school versus the new school. I suppose, in a way, Greg, and I don't mean to insult you, please, but there's this sort of school of thinking that, you know, protect our interests. I heard you talked about it, you know, with America and now British. I mean, what interests are we talking about, and what right do we have in the first place to project our power into a foreign country where we're not invited to take part in this by the Yemen government? I mean, what on earth are we doing there? And what are you doing there?
So, I think the UK and the US, by way of providing intelligence and logistical and even humanitarian support, there's hundreds of thousands of aid baskets that are going from USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, and also the UK-backed World Food Program, into Yemen, to the legitimate government of Yemen, as backed by the United Nations, which is President Hadi. So there is an invitation for these governments to come in. They're not just doing a carte blanche and unilateral.
By the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. By the United Nations backs the Hadi government. As I said beforehand, if any of your listeners want to have a better idea of what I'm talking about, they can refer to UN Security Resolution 2216, which provides a roadmap for ending the conflict. Hadi has complied with that. Unfortunately, the Houthis haven't. So just by looking at this through international law, which is maybe the other camp versus protecting your interests, there is a way and a reason and a map forward to have peace in Yemen.
We've got to finish the program, and I thank you very much, both of you gentlemen. It's just time for you to come back and rebuttal there, Hussein, but please speak slowly and not so emotional so we can actually hear what you're saying, okay? You've got about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Okay. Just for him to excuse Britain for selling weapons for Saudis because he said their allies, but a minute ago he was criticizing the Houthi for firing ballistic missiles into Saudi, and it's himself defense. He's criticizing the Houthi fighting and defending the country, and the Houthi are from Yemen, and Yemen is their allies. Similar to what you said, that Britain, the Saudi is a British ally. We are not here talking about allies. We're talking about tens of thousands of civilians has been killed and injured. Hundreds of schools has been destroyed. Hospital has been destroyed. Is this all about allies? Do you give your allies the weapons that he can destroy an entire infrastructure of a country? If the Houthi were wrong in their coup, as you call it, does this give Britain the right and the United States to declare war alongside with the Saudi-led coalition on Yemen? Do you have the right to have a blockade on 23 million because there is a coup in that country? There are coups everywhere around the world.
Okay.
If everybody will intervene like this, then they will kill millions of people. But the main thing, they want to sell weapons, and they want to get the Saudi deeper in this conflict. I think it's the same thing happened with Saddam Hussein when he fought Iran, and at the end it was the Saddam Hussein fall in the hand of the West. And I think it's the same story, and just we will see the future and the coming days will still have this.
Wow. Okay. Stop. Okay. Yeah. the dams have burst, and we've sort of, you know, going to cover, like, we can cover 10,000 other areas. We can't today. This program is finished. Thank you very much indeed. But I would like to invite both of you back for another talk, and I'd like to talk about the relation of Yemen and wider in the Middle East with Syria. Thank you very much indeed, Greg Roman, Director of the Middle East Forum and Foreign Policy Institute in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Hussein Al-Buhayiti, a Yemeni journalist on the ground in Yemen. Thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. Goodbye. Thank you.